Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Alright, this is the mail report for the comics that sold through Diamond to retailers for March 2011. So the numbers we're talking about again are what the publishers count as sales that go to the retailers that they pay for through Diamond. Not talking mass market, not talking newsstand if any of that still exists, not talking convention sales. But this, I think, is really the bread and butter of the comic industry, and I think a lot of what really is kind of charting the course for new content creation. So that's why I find this information very useful.
Yeah, even in the advent of digital comics, because you got a lot of people that are predicting the death of print comics, you know, I think that digital comics are certainly a force. They're something that's going to be coming and are here. But I think that people are underestimating the cost of content creation. And, you know, just because you have something digital, you know, all the online content creation and the, you know, Comixology and Apple and all those guys are taking their pieces of the pie. It's really not costing a whole lot less to create original content for a digital platform versus, you know, creating it, you know, and making a sale price for print comics. And I think that print, just like with trade paperbacks, is going to be, at least for several years to come, the content creation engine that's going to be driving digital, much like it's the content creation engine that provides material for most of the trade paperback market.
Yeah, I would love to know how the digital market is doing in terms of units and sales and stuff like that. That information is not available, at least to me. I'm sure it is to various, you know, digital publishers and stuff like that. But, you know, just like they're not releasing the print numbers, they're not releasing the digital ones by and large. Really, I think, you know, digital came about in 2010, but it's 2011 where it's really becoming a potentially major force in the industry, and I think that's a good thing. If they can get the prices down to where, you know, it's a nominal cost, I think they're going to get a lot more adopters. But again, we're looking for, you know, the sales numbers here as indicators of, again, how the direct market is doing, based on, you know, what we see in the statement of ownership out of the Marvel Comics and stuff. It looks like that direct market accounts for 80 to sometimes 90% of the total sales for comics. So, definite major factor here. Now, as we have seen many, 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 many times before, and no doubt will again, Marvel Comics had the largest share of the pie of the top 300. It had 49.17% of the units, 51.82% by dollars. Part of that is they've had fewer higher ticket items, and they had, you know, a higher average price than DC had. They also had a lot more items. They had 114 items, only one of which was listed as a reorder by my system, whereas DC Comics had 85 items, so that's what, 30 less, thereabouts, and they had 33.83% of the total unit sales for the top 300 and 30.39% of the total dollars for the top 300. So obviously Marvel and DC, the top dogs. After that, we drop below the 5% mark in terms of units and dollars. Image had the largest share out of the next rung of publishers with 4.26% of the units, 3.84% of the dollars. IDW had 3.93% of the units and 4.5% of the dollars. Again, it goes towards a higher average price than some of the other publishers. And then rounding out, the top five publishers this time around was Dynamite with 2.47% of the units, 3.22% of the dollars, But rounding out actually the premier publishers, Dark Horse came in behind Dynamite with 2.37% of the units, 2.44% of the dollars. The other kind of, I don't say big dog, but bigger of the back half certainly would be Boom Studios with 1.02% of the units and 1.21% of the dollars. Everybody else in the back half was well under 1% either by dollars or by units.
Yeah, Dark Horse, in case people don't look at the comics news, Dark Horse just had some layoffs. They are, you know, it's being, you know, sixth place, not even in the top five, being a, you know, premier publisher, it's taken its toll. You know, they're cutting back, and there was some talk from some of the people at Dark Horse around it, you know, someone who was laid off that was saying that, you know, the Gold Key relaunch didn't feel was handled, you know, the right way. And I've had that kind of feeling myself, just from the standpoint of it seemed like it was interesting, but then the frequency of those books coming out dropped to almost nothing. I mean, you saw an issue of Mighty Samson. I don't think you ever saw another one. Did you see a second issue of Turok?
No, because I've actually got that on order.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Magnus really slowed down.
I don't think any of them came out in March.
Yeah.
None made the top 300.
That was something that there was a big push on, and then it just evaporated. You know, it's just like, what happened to it? And, you know, this is an indication. You know, it's like the sales numbers. You know, you got to look at this kind of stuff. And I wish them the best, because, I mean, Dark Horse has some good comics. I really like their Robert E. Howard properties that they have coming out. Of course, Usagi Yojimbo. I am liking the, you know, the relaunch of Dark Horse Presents looks very cool. We talked about it before on one of the preview shows. I'm not certain that the cover price might not scare some people off on that one, because it's what, like $7.99 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the Star Wars comics that they put out, there's a lot of stuff that seems to have potential for having a wider appeal than the direct market. And then it's got to be the case that, you know, Borders going out of business, or not going out. They've had store closings, and you know, they declared bankruptcy, and there's been some issues with Borders. But that's a big retail channel for product. I mean, I go into Borders and I see Dark Horse stuff in there all the time. You know, so that's got to be affecting their sales as well. There's a ripple effect.
Well, I'm not all that knowledgeable on the mass market and how the bookstores work and stuff. And the question I've got around the Borders thing and how this may impact some of the comic publishers is, I mean, all three of the locations here in Austin, Texas are closing down. A matter of fact, I believe they are all shut by now, but I'm not positive on that. At least one is. Anyways, my sister's been going to these stores on a regular basis, just seeing what's left on the shelves, you know, that she's willing to pay the highly discounted price for that she wouldn't pay full price for. And she's been telling me how she's been walking out of there with, like, stacks and stacks of books for, you know, 50 cent, you know, versus the $7 or $8 cover price, or, you know, something else where it's like a 90% discount or something. And my understanding was that the bookstores worked on pretty much a returnable basis by and large, which in the past has actually really hurt some publishers, because they'll get a whole bunch, they'll sit, they won't sell, and they'll dump them back on the publisher. But if they're blowing all this stuff out for essentially pennies on the dollar, who's getting that money? How much, if anything, are the publishers getting? Is there anything left to go to the creators? If Dark Horse had any significant amount of material at the Borders locations that are shutting down, and that's getting liquidated, how much is that hurting, you know, Dark Horse? How much is that hurting Viz, Tokyo Pop, some of these others? because I think it was Tokyo Pop that just decided to close its doors here in North America, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's a big deal, too.
Yeah, that was announced just the other day that they'll be Tokyo Pop is completely shutting down operations except for German licensing and film. And, you know, so all the Tokyo Pop manga, that's going away.
Well, just to say how recent that news is, that was announced yesterday after I recorded the day before that with Chris on the trade section. So very much kind of breaking news. And, you know, as big as manga has been over the last couple of years, with the Borders, which had been a heavy proponent of it, you know, closing a lot of doors, certainly not all of them. But now, you know, Tokyo Pop actually closing its doors and stuff, it's going to be interesting to see how the manga stuff kind of plays out over 2011. It certainly is going to be, I think, a very eventful year for comics business-wise. Now, looking at the breakdown of the top 300, just the premier publishers account for, you know, 93.57% of the units sold on the top 300. Once you add in Dynamite and Boom, you get to 97.33% of the total units. So what that really means is, you know, there are only a handful of publishers accounting for the majority of the sales, because really once you start getting below the top 300 here, I mean, you're doing, you know, a few thousand units or whatever. I mean, any publisher below this had to be selling under 4,760 units. So again, that may be good for them, but in terms of ranking up in this kind of echelon, isn't enough this month. So I think, you know, the monthly comics are getting to be a really hard market for smaller publishers to break into, because they're really getting crowded out by Marvel and DC. I mean, Marvel had nearly 3 million units in March, whereas DC had a little over 2 million. And Image, about a quarter million, and then from there it kind of drops. So,
yeah, and look at the number of items. That's amazing. Marvel had 113 items. That's just mind-boggling.
Well, and again, that's about 30 more than the DC.
Yeah, I mean, DC having 85. I was thinking about, you know, choices that people have to make, and it kind of goes along like Jason Wood over on 11 O'Clock Comics. He writes a column over on iFanboy, and his topic this last week, as you listened to this a week ago, issue was, you know, it's like, I'm not looking at it, so I'm going to paraphrase, and I apologize, Jason, if I'm not exactly quoting him correctly, but it was kind of like, just don't be a martyr about comics. You know, it's like, buy what you buy, you know. So, okay, Flashpoint comes out with 20 books. Well, you don't have to buy all 20 books. No one's coming and twisting your arm to buy 20 Flashpoint books if you don't want to buy 20 Flashpoint books. You know, Fear itself, they're blasting out all kinds of miniseries on it. You know, well, you don't have to buy all of them. And, you know, I kind of look at that as, you know, with anybody that's got any kind of a comics budget or anything, you know, just how would you even buy all 113 of those Marvel items?
You know, even just, I don't buy all 113 of those Marvel
items.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a massive quantity of comics coming out. I mean, if you look at, so if I look at the average price here times the number of units, that should tell me how much it would have cost to buy all the units, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Close to $400 for those 113 items, you know, $397.76. That is a lot of money. Most people are spending, you know, I would guess less than $100 a month on comics, and a lot of people, you know, considerably less than that. You know, so even if you are buying exclusively Marvel, you are buying less than a quarter of their output. You know, it's mind-boggling. I mean, so I guess my point is by definition, you have to make choices. So buy what you like. You know,
it raises another issue, is what kind of sales mentality are the guys over at Marvel and to a lesser degree DC and these other publishers. But let's pick on Marvel for a moment, just because they're putting out so much stuff. You know, with the sales mentality in terms of, and I'm talking sales in the corporate realm where you actually have people making sales call, that kind of stuff. There's kind of the hunter mentality and the farmer mentality. The hunter is going and actively hunting down new clients, getting them on board, and is again, new client acquisition, which in this case would translate to new readers. We'll kind of abstract out the retailers for a moment, because really, it's not like you're going to go hunt down somebody and say, hey, you want to open a comic store? You're more likely to say, hey, do you want to read this comic? But then there's the farmer mentality, which is you've already got a customer, now you're cross-selling to them. And in this arena with the comics, it would come down to, well, you're already getting Thor. You want to get Fear Itself? If you're getting Fear Itself, you want to get Fear Itself Homefront. You're getting that? How about you want to get this, that, and the other? You know, Journey into Mystery, Mighty Thor, Thunderstrike, you know, just, again, to pick on Thor for a moment. And it very much seems like the methodology that the sales and marketing guys over really both Marvel and DC are doing is very much the farmer mentality, whereas I would argue, say, with Image, if they were to really do marketing, and I think that's questionable, they're really doing more of the hunter. They're actually, I think, trying to put out different properties in the hopes of getting different readers and not trying to franchise out the stuff. But again, Image is a very unique entity in how it publishes. You look over at IDW, they don't do one Transformers, they do five. They don't do one G.I. Joe, they do five, or thereabouts.
But at the same time, they have lots of different things because they have G.I. Joe and Transformers, sure, and they've got this infestation business that they're trying to, like, you know, spread out. But at the same time, then, they will put out four or five completely different kinds of comics. You know, like, they'll put out The Last Unicorn, they'll put out...
You could argue that with DC and Marvel too,
right? But I mean, it's a little more apparent when you know you have a smaller
It's not lost in the shuffle when you've only got 20 versus 113 new items that month.
And I think that you know they do go to different genres probably a little more so than Marvel. I mean, they might go with some of their icon books or something like that, but you're not going to find a. Well, I guess they got that weird tennis book, so maybe that's their...
You got the tennis book, you've got the authors, you know, really it's the authors line that gives them kind of the diversity.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very heavy in the superhero genre, no question about that whatsoever. But it does seem like Marvel and DC are going very heavy into the cross-selling versus the selling into new readers or whatever, and I think that's really starting to show on the sales charts. Because, I mean, top of the list this time around was FF number one. I don't think anybody should be surprised by that. It did about 114,472 units, which is, you know, really good. And what's, you know, interesting is the next highest item Marvel had on the list was down at rank 8, and that was Avengers 11 with 66,618. So, you know, it 2-to-1 difference there, pretty much, between FF and Avengers. You know, and again, quite a few DC things fit in the middle there. Green Lantern, Batman, Dark Knight, Brightest Day, Batman Incorporated. I think by cross-selling and focusing on that so much with the different events and incidents and things like that over time, they're getting more money out of fewer readers, and that makes it harder to have top-selling books.
Well, there's also the element of, I can guarantee you there is not 114,472 unique customers for FF, because the other farmer thing is getting the same person to buy multiple copies of the same item.
Well, and look at how top dozen items have those multiple covers.
But it's not even the multiple covers. I mean, on the FF book, they polybagged it, right? So, you know, you'll have... Which I guess counts as a multiple cover, but you know, there's a certain number of people who will buy one to keep pristine in the poly bag, and then they will buy one to open up and read.
Okay, in the interest in full disclosure, I'll admit I did that with FF. Did you?
I didn't do it for the purposes of that reason. I did it because we are doing this show, and I knew I would get spoiled on the book if I didn't get it. You know,
well, I mean,
so
that's why I did it, too.
Right.
But the point is, I did
right.
it.
I did it, right. But the motive was not, I want to keep one pristine because I would have normally just bought one and opened the bag. You know, I wouldn't have gotten an extra one to save.
Agreed. Same here, but
I think there are people who did it. But I did buy two of them, so yes, I am guilty on that respect.
And that's kind of what they were banking on when they polybagged. You know, they're pulling out as many of the stops as they can and as many gimmicks as they can in the attempt to keep these numbers, I think, really from just completely, you know, falling to the floor. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Obviously, with FF number one, it did. The question is, yep. How is that series going to sell, you know, 5-6 issues in? I think it's going to go back to how Fantastic Four was doing.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's not even the show. I shouldn't even blame the show. For me, it was more because I buy my comics through DCBS. I almost probably shouldn't even have tried to buy that issue through DCBS because the reason I bought the second copy was I knew by the end of that day, because they revealed, you know, somebody's going to be killed. You know, I knew Facebook or the forum or heck, just look at, turn it on CNN or something. I would have that story spoiled for me if I tried to wait an entire week to read it. And it takes me from the Wednesday when it comes out till the next Tuesday to get my box from DCBS. So yeah. It was more of wanting to read the story and experiencing it without it having the last page spoiled for me by some external influence.
Right. And again, that was the same reason I did it. But regardless of the why,
we did it.
And you know, the sales kind of reflect that. And I think there's an aspect of transient sales trends that are really kind of working against that farmer mentality that these publishers seem to have. And it's using a farming metaphor, almost like crop rotation, but in a negative sense than a good sense. I mean, typical crop rotation is you move your crops around to where different nutrients are getting pulled out of the soil and the ones that the corn needs get rebuilt while something else is growing there or something. I'm not a farmer, so I could be totally wrong on that, but let's go with that. But with comics, the transient nature of sales we get is, let's take items 5 and 6 on the list this time around, which is Brightest Day 21 and 22. 21 did 70,204. 22 did 69,824. In terms of sales, this is a highly successful series. It has stayed up at the top of the charts the entire run. I think that's great. I'm really enjoying that series. But come issue 24, I think it is, it's over. Are they going to be able to transition me into either that Brightest Day aftermath or some other title? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But what we've noticed is really anytime there's a jumping off point, jumping on point, or a transition to decision point to make, it may benefit the company for that short term, but long term it doesn't make any real difference. Often any difference it does make and is negative. In other words, I should phrase it as it never really benefits the publisher in the long run. Again, I think FF got a big bump here over Fantastic Four. I think there's decent odds that next month we will notice this drop by at least half. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be 30%, 40%. I'm expecting more like a 50 to 60. Just gut feeling compared to how this sold versus how the Fantastic Four series has sold. And then it'll quickly get right back to where it was. Now, did they do their job? Did they sell this single issue? Yes, they sold this single issue. But I go back to, is their job to sell an issue of a comic or to sell the series, to sell us on that, to get us into the habitual buying habit? And I think the way they're publishing stuff and the way they're trying to market it is almost at cross purposes with each other.
And I would say that what I perceive as the mission of Marvel sales and marketing is to sell this one issue, not to build sales over time.
I certainly think that's how they're acting, but is that really their mission? Should that be their mission?
I won't disagree that probably that shouldn't be their mission, but they act like it is. I mean, if it's not their stated mission, they're doing a pretty terrible job. Let's put it that way.
I guess the question is, should they be trying to get the top slot, or should they be trying to inflate all their other stuff on the list and get it to where it's not as anemic as it is in some cases?
Yeah, I think they're pulling in the maximum dollars that they can any given month. And if they can do that by blasting out 113 different titles, I mean, heck, you know, selling an extra 50,000 copies of FF number one at $3.99 a book is $200,000 retail, right? I mean,
and I get that adds up, but what good does that do them 3 months from now? You know, we have seen cases where with X-Men, with some of the other X titles, all of them had very strong first issues, and then almost all of them dropped by about 40 or 50 or 60% on the second issue. So that, to me, connotes a failure in some respect of not being able to retain sales. I don't care how good your marketing is if you get people on board for a single issue and they don't come back. And what we see by and large is people, generally speaking, don't come back. And until they can combat that, I think they're going about the marketing the wrong way. You know, the other one I think we're going to see a massive, massive drop on is down at rank 16 with Godzilla Kingdom of Monsters number one.
That was the one that
had the 75 or so different retailer covers. They had to order 500 to get that, plus whatever else it ordered. It did 58,879 estimated units. There ain't no way it's going to do anywhere close to this.
I'd be surprised if number two, I'm going to guess 15, maybe.
I was leaning more towards the 10,000 mark, but I could see 15, possibly 20.
Yeah.
But it seems like it could also do 5. You know what I mean? This is going to be one where we're going to see a really huge drop on the second issue, and I think that's a shame. But this is clearly inflated numbers because it was essentially a vanity press cover for whatever retailer wanted them. And that's not a bad marketing, you know, deal, but if I felt it had the content that would get people coming back for the second issue, great, because they would have set the bar high and been able to keep it that way, but by and large, that doesn't happen. So I think we've got a lot of cases where, you know, reader retention is a problem. Again, the transient sales stuff of titles just coming and going, I think, causes major problems in terms of reader retention.
Yeah. So Marvel had 3 books in the top 10. But, you know, again, they even not, you know, DC controls the top of the chart. But, you know, once you get out of the top 10, Marvel just jumps in and they got so many books.
Yeah. But if that's what you need to do to meet your bottom line, so be it. I just think they'd be better off doing fewer. If they could do fewer books and still get the same sales, that would be more effective. Now, another one I think is going to be interesting to see where the second issue lands is at rank 20, and that's Venom number 1. It did 53,981 units, which is, I think, really good sales for a first issue these days. Don't know if people are going to, how many people are going to come back on that next one or not.
Where was Amazing Spider-Man 654.1, which was essentially the Venom 0.1?
I believe that came out last month. If we go to the other spreadsheet I sent you this time around for the Marvel 0.1 program, we can see that the 654.1 sold 55,283, which is a little bit more, about, say, 1,500 more, thereabouts-ish, than either 654 or 655. It's actually higher than almost anything higher than 652, 653, and 654. 656 and 7, however, sold better than that.
So it sold a little bit better than Venom number 1 also. So it sold better than the 2 Spider-Man issues around it, as well as...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Again, I think that goes to mixed messages on the marketing. I personally think that the entire notion behind the 0.1 program and the very existence of it is detrimental to sales in the long term. It's yet another signal to readers and retailers that you can't just jump onto comics anywhere. And I think anything that furthers that notion is bad in and of itself. The particular, you know, sales around these 0.1 issues, you know, I charted those out. By and large, it's almost as if they were just another issue of the title. So in that respect, you could argue that they were the program was a huge success because it gave them an excuse to get yet another issue out that month.
Well, according to Tom Brevoort, and I am quoting here, he calls the 0.1 program a massive success. We're going to be continuing with that program. We've got another flight of 0.1 issues ramping up for later this year. I have to say that I think our creators and editors did a really bang-up job on them. The quality level throughout was very high. And then he says, so speaking to retailers at the Diamond Summit, our senior VP of sales, David Gabriel, received numerous requests to make 0.1s a regular thing. So overall, our retailers seem to both have liked them and been able to sell them. And then he says, a DC exec I won't name congratulated CB Cebulski on the 0.1 program at WonderCon and said they had wished they had thought of it. I find that curious. But
now, just as a quick, you know, history lesson or whatever, I believe Tom Brevoort was the guy who was saying that Civil War IV was going to ship on time a week or two before it was announced it was going to be, what, 2 months delayed? And he has had inaccuracies in some of his statements in the past is all I'm going to say on that.
Yeah, well, I don't expect the marketing guy in charge of marketing for Marvel to say anything other than this. You know, it would almost be like, you know, you get fired if you come out and say something other than this kind of thing. It's your job to...
not on marketing, though. He's on editorial. Granted, he's still a spokesman for the company and still under those same issues of, you know, don't sink the ship we're sailing on.
Right.
So I get that.
Yeah, he seems like he's a marketing shill almost any time I hear him talk. Let me just put it that way. Oh, I know he's an editor, but he's like...
He has to act as a mouthpiece for the company.
Yeah.
And there's a cost of doing that, no question about that. But I would think if, again, editorial and marketing at these companies were doing better, we would be seeing stronger sales.
I think that the 0.1 program in and of itself, I mean, I don't know. I guess lots of retailers are allegedly going to Marvel telling them that they love this.
Numerous. That means more than one.
Right. Well, also... a Diamond Retailer Summit, you know, who's going to be at that? You know, like the big chain retailers and stuff, and maybe whoever's in the town where that's being held might go to it. I mean, I don't think...
That would have been up in Dallas.
Yeah. I don't think that someone who has a shop somewhere is going to be providing, you know, going down to the Diamond Retailer Summit, but...
Probably not. And also, that was about a month ago, so I'm trying to think how many of these 0.1 issues were actually out at that point. So it could have been more in anticipation. Now, granted, the WonderCon comment would have been after most of these that we're seeing here would have been out. Now, one thing I want to point out is at rank 42, and that's Walking Dead number 83, which has managed to climb slowly over the time to a 33,686 unit mark. So both that and issue 82, which is down at rank 51, which did 31,174 units over the 30,000 mark, now having broken into the top 50 comics. I think that is clearly a sign of success for Kirkman, both in terms of the actual writing he's doing on the book. Obviously, the TV show is not hurting in any respect. We got a, you know, 8% jump there on that issue 83. So I think, you know, he's been doing a successful job both creating the book, writing the book, and marketing the book. Seeing things as The Walking Dead Weekly, the trades, the hardcovers, the compendiums, etc., as additional marketing for the monthly series. So I think that is a good sign. And so now when we talk about, quote-unquote, down in the image numbers, we're still, you know, within the top 50 these days. Now, if we start talking down at the bottom of the DC numbers, that's a different matter entirely. I was really kind of, you know, surprised just how low some of the books set in the mainstream DC universe were. And, I think that's important to look at, because it used to be that being part of that product line guaranteed a certain level of sales, and that's just not the case anymore. I mean, we're seeing Doom Patrol, which is ending with 22. We've got issue 20 here at rank 202, 9,386. Below that, we've got Freedom Fighters number 7, which ends with what, issue 9? I think 9. 8,886 units. Azrael number 18, which I believe is the final issue, 7,617 units. Again, all of these set firmly in the mainstream DC universe.
And some of these, well, like the one that's most interesting, because I just hear, and I have the same personal opinion, that it's a really great book, and that's Thunder Agents, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you hear all kinds of buzz. People are like, oh, it's a great book, you know, love it. You know, 99.34, you know, down at rank 194. I mean, it's under 10,000, and it's a DC book that people rave about how good it is.
I think it's great. I think they're doing some excellent work there. Technically, it's set in the DC universe. We don't really see much evidence of that on an issue-to-issue basis, whereas obviously the others we do. But that's another one where, again, great material, by and large, getting ignored. I mean, you figure 2,000, 2,500-ish stores, that's what, 4, maybe 5 copies per store on average? And again, not every store is going to be getting a copy, because there are going to be some stores getting more than the, you know, the 5 or so issues. I mean, it's only a couple of more ranks above that we've got Rebels 26, 10,257. Weird Worlds number 3, 10,470. Now, what's really interesting is at ranks 167 and 168, we've got Jimmy Olsen number 1, 12,313, and Giant Size Adam number 1, 12,200. The Giant Size Adam finished off the backup feature that had been in Adventure Comics. Jimmy Olsen reprinted the 4 parts of his backup feature from Action Comics and contained the other 3 parts that were new. I enjoyed both of those. I thought they were really good. I thought they were good value for the money, certainly on a bit more so on the Giant Size Adam than the Jimmy Olsen, since that was partial reprints. But again, 12,200 or 300 for those. Firmly set in the DC universe. You know, the one that's going to get a bump in the coming months, though, is Booster Gold 42 at rank 132, 16,093 units. This is going to be one of the parts of the Flashpoint event, so we should see that, in theory, skyrocket to easily 3-4 times how it's doing.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's not going to sell better being core into Flashpoint. But I'm guessing, just a guess, I'm guessing that the main Flashpoint book and the Flash will outsell it by a decent margin.
Oh, yeah. I totally expect that. I was trying to go through the Flashpoint titles, because I know we've talked about this a couple of times, including last month before the solicits were even, you know, before previews was even out, on just how many Flashpoint titles there are. And really, if you count Booster Gold and Flashpoint, there's a total of 22, 16 of which are 3-issue miniseries. I don't remember how many issues Flashpoint's going for. There are a couple of one-shots. I think there were 4 one-shots. And then, of course, Booster Gold and ongoing. I was trying to figure out how I thought those were going to rank based on how similar-ish things were selling these days. And in the process of going through that, because, again, that's kind of what a retailer would do. It's like, well, Emperor Aquaman, how do I think that'll do? It'll sell close to, well, gee, there's not an Aquaman thing really going on right now other than Brightest Day. Do I compare it to that? What do I compare it to? The best I could come up with is, well, it's written by Tony Bedard. What else is he writing? Oh, Green Lantern Corps. Well, maybe that? And even that seemed like a stretch.
Probably more like Rebels.
Probably. You know, Green Arrow Industries obviously use Green Arrow for that. But what do you use as a comparison point for, like, the Legion of Doom starring Heatwave, Citizen Cold, Grodd of War, and some of these others? You know, it seems like...
I'd almost say go back, if they have it, you know, like Citizen Cole by Scott Collins. Go back and look at that Solomon Grundy mini that he did.
Yeah. It comes down to what would you consider a comparison title, both on terms of the property and in terms of the writer. And then I can dig up the sales and kind of compare on that. But it was something that I didn't think was going to be that hard to go figure out what would be a good comparison title. And it was tough. So I think we're going to see a lot of retailer frustration in that area.
It's going to just be a lot of guesses. You know, it's like, I don't think your average retailer, I mean, even though it's, you know, it's their money that they're doing, I don't think they're going to go and spend hours researching it. They're going to, like, pull some numbers out of thin air.
But I think.
And err on the side of caution.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Because they're having to guess, they're going to be conservative. I really don't expect any retailer to go to any effort whatsoever on half of these titles to figure out how they're going to sell. It's not cost justifiable. You know, the odds of some of these selling so well to really accurately guess versus I've had X people on my pull list say they want all the Flashpoint, X people say they just want Flashpoint, so I'm going to do whatever. You know, it's going to be a throw a dart at the wall and see what happens.
I mean, I even look at some of these books. Like, I mean, the main reason I'm getting that one Batman book is because Azzarello and Rizzo are doing it, you know, that did 100 Bullets. And that's like, oh, that's very cool. I loved 100 Bullets. But I don't remember what the sales numbers were on 100 Bullets when it was coming out. But I'm guessing, you know, they probably weren't much more than 12 or 13,000 at the most, you know, given that it's a Vertigo title and most of those titles are not, you know, screaming up the sales charts.
I mean, I was just trying to figure out what order I would rank the 22 items for when they came out in terms of how they sold, not even trying to figure out how they would sell, but just the relative rankings between them. And it's tough. And I think part of it is there are simply too many decision points for readers and retailers to make around that. And
now, if I had to guess, I'd say that taking out the, you know, Flash and Flashpoint, but of the minis, I would guess that maybe the George Perez one would do the best.
And it may. It's
that's just a guess, though. You know, it's just, and that's, who knows? I mean, what did Legion of Three Worlds sell?
I would have to go look that up. I don't have that on, you know, this month's stuff. But, okay, that's great. That's one. What about the other 20 kind of a thing?
And yeah, I know. And when you get down to the ones that are written by some editor who no one's ever heard of and drawn by some other guy no one's ever heard of, you know, what are, you know, there you're just going to then go on, does the topic look cool? Does the five-word solicit tagline tell you anything? And, you know, it's just like, put your thumb out in the wind and make a guess. That I there's just not a lot to go on these things.
Yeah, and I think that's the core of the problem there.
Some I mean, you have a cover, and in most cases, the cover's not drawn by the person doing the interior art.
Yeah. I think a lot of these are going to be good and fun to read, but there's just not enough information to go on with this. You know, with the exception of the Booster Gold one, Secret Seven, I don't know. Emperor Aquaman. These have the same artist as cover artist. Abin Sur has the same artist and cover artist. Deathstroke, Curse of the Ravager does. Citizen Cold. So actually a couple. Lois Lane and the Canterbury Cricket. But this is one where the way they have chosen to market these books, I think, is going to be highly ineffective and unfortunate for the sales. You know, but again, look at how many of these DC titles are below the 20,000 mark. You know, we've also got JSA All-Stars, Power Girl, Zatanna, Secret Six. Now, on Zatanna, what I find interesting, we got issue 10 here having done 18,645 units, issue 11 having done 18,431 units, so about a 1.15% drop on that issue 11, about an 88% increase on 10. So, I mean, you know, kind of evens out or whatever. But if you look over on the trade side at rank 11, and Chris and I talked about this a little bit, we've got 2,297 units for that first trade, you know, which I think is these days fairly strong sales, particularly for a title down at this point in the monthly listings. So I think that may give that title a little bit more longevity than a few of these others. But I also think Booster Gold, you know, down around that 16,000 mark is part of why it's being, you know, integrated into the Flashpoint stuff fairly heavily. You know, it's just, it used to be you were in the DC Universe, you were guaranteed a certain level of sales, and a lot of these are at levels that, you know, when we started talking about the sales numbers a couple of years ago, would have been grounds for cancellation. So I think the bar has been lowered, and doesn't seem to be, you know, I mean, it seems to be continuing.
I was at the Aspen panel at WonderCon, and one of the guys on the, I forget who it was, one of the artists was on there. He was talking about a book that he did for Image back in the late 90s that, you know, he said was, you know, he was like a new artist. He, like, his terrible work, you know, he just thought it was awful. And he got a call from one of the big shots in Image. It's like, oh man, this is the worst selling title Image has ever had. We're going to have to cancel this book. You know, nothing against you, but, you know, man, it's selling 350,000 copies. We can't put out a book selling that few. You know, this was, you know, it's like, oh wow. You know, it's like 15 years later, you know, whatever.
350,000, you say?
Yeah, 350,000.
Yeah, top four items this month, below that.
Yeah.
Totaled. For the
yeah,
top three.
Added together, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, if we were to look at the bottom of the list to get to that, we need to take roughly from rank 240 on down, so about 60, 61 items.
It's just how much things have changed and how much things are contextual, you know?
Well, in talking about the contextual, there's been some times where people are saying, well, the middle of the list is doing all right, the bottom of the list is going up, you know, whatever. I find that to be so odd of a way to measure stuff, because it really doesn't matter how ranks, say, 50 to 100 are doing from month to month to month. If things are starting at the number one rank, sliding down through theirs over the month and dropping off the bottom over the months, you know, and again, that's kind of that rotation of titles and things like that. Sure, those ranks may be bouncing up, down, whatever. And frankly, they're really not changing all that much. Certainly at the 1 through 10, they bounce around a lot. But it doesn't matter how the ranks are doing, because the ranks aren't what's selling. It's the items in the ranks that are at issue. And so often we're seeing just a really bumpy sales trend on a lot of these things. And it's, you know, it's surprising. I mean, when we see, again, a 22% drop on issue 2 of Iron Man 2.0, that's kind of standard. We've seen a couple that are a lot higher and lower. One that had a really big bump was Outsiders number 37 at rank 104. It went up about 56.24%. That's a gain of 7,226 units, putting it at 20,074 units compared to its previous issue, which was 12,848 estimated units. So, again, that's one closer to the 10,000 and the 20,000 by and large, but because that was part of the Reign of Doomsday, it shot up. Next issue, it'll probably drop back down. We're not seeing any kind of retention on these bumps, and, you know, to me, that's the big problem. You know, I've said that a couple of times. I'll keep saying it as we keep having these things, you know, dropping down on the lists. You know, we've got a lot of Marvel items around the 12 to 13,000 range. We got the Cyclops one-shots, Spider-Girl, the Captain America Secret Avengers one-shot, Namor First Mutant, Captain America, and First 13.
I read somewhere that Namor First Mutant's getting cut off issue 10 or 11 or something like that.
Not a big surprise. It's down, you know, at 13,385. You know, you look at a lot of these Captain America one-shots, and they're doing at the 12 to 13,000 range, you know, and it's got to cost a certain amount of money to put together a 20-page comic. I don't know if those are 20, 22 pages of story, but we'll say 20. To pencil it, to ink it, to color it, to letter it, for the editor to put it together, for the cover, all that kind of stuff. I think, you know, $5,000 is a reasonable, if not low, amount to estimate for that, and that's just a number out of thin air there. Factor in the fact that, you know, out of this 12,000 units or whatever, you know, they're going to get the cover price of $399 minus the 60 or so percent that Diamond's going to take, etc. There's only so much of that they're going to have. They got to pay for printing. It gets to the point where, was it really worthwhile doing all those one-shots? You know, sure, they're going to collect those up into a trade or two, but how well is that trade or two going to do? We talked about how well the Shadowland incident did, and two more of those trades hit the trade side, and Chris and I talked about that. The Shadowland Moon Knight premier hardcover was at 735 units. At rank 138 on the trade list, and at rank 148 on the trade list was Shadowland Blood on the Streets premier hardcover at 695 units. So it's not like those did particularly well on the trade side. You look down at rank 189 on the comic side, we got the Power Man and Iron Fist number 3 dropped another 16% down to 10,226 units. There was no reason to think that when that gets collected into a paperback or a hardcover, that that's going to sell particularly well. So I'm not seeing where they think some of this revenue is going to be coming from to justify some of these projects they're doing.
What amazes me is, like, well, okay, so Captain America movie's coming out. So, of course, they blast out tons and tons of Captain America comic books, you know, some of which are better than others, say kindly. And same thing with Thor. Thor movie's coming out. So, okay, Thor movie's coming out. Every other comic book that's not a Captain America comic book has got to be a Thor comic book. What are they doing to get the people who are going to the movie to buy these comic books? I mean, I was kind of taken by the fact that you pick up almost any Marvel comic book now, and they're like the little thing in the upper left corner of the cover with the number and stuff. It's got like a little headshot of the guy playing Thor, and it's got the date of the movie and everything like that. So the comics are just going all out. You know, same thing. If I read a DC comic book, they've got all these, not on the cover necessarily, but all kinds of pictures and articles and stuff in them about the Green Lantern movie. So there's all kinds of stuff that the comics are doing to drive people to the movie. And I would argue it's like, what comic fan is not going to go see the comic? It's like, do you really have to, you know, try that hard to get these 40,000 people who are reading the comic book to go to see the movie? You know, it's the other direction that is important. You know, it's like the, you know, you look at how Thor or Captain America is selling. And there's going to be 20 times that number of people on the opening weekend that go see that movie, you know?
Well, let's look at the other direction for a second, and let's start with looking at rank 33 here of Invincible Iron Man 502. It did 43,899 units. Now, I'm going to use that as a comparison point against how the Iron Man DVD in the Iron Man 2 Blu-ray DVD stuff sold the opening, I think it was weekend or week of release. So the people who actually bought either of those, if one half of 1% of those were to buy of either of those and count them, you know, just the Iron Man DVD or just the Iron Man 2 DVD Blu-ray, you know, or Blu-ray during that first week, one half of 1% of either of those figures were to buy the next issue of Iron Man, it would pretty much double in sales. Again, one half of 1% of the people who bought the movie on DVD or Blu-ray the first week of release. Not everyone who's bought it since, or everyone who saw it in the theaters, or whatever. I think getting half a percent of those who liked it enough or were interested enough to pay the
$17 $20 or something to buy this thing physically at the store it as soon as it came out.
Yes.
Right.
I think it's realistic to think maybe if a half a percent of those could be interested in the comic. And again, they could have doubled in sales. And you're right. There's zero translation of how those things are doing.
You know, if you just come back and you think about it, it's just like it. The scale, you know, just like, wow, you know, it's just hard to grasp.
Well, I mean, you could chart the sales of Iron Man over time and draw lines of where the movies are, and you're not really going to notice anything, you know, other than there are now a few lines in an otherwise, you know, steady sales trend or what have you. So I certainly think that the movies, the TV shows, things along those lines are great marketing opportunities for the comic companies. This whole excuse of, oh, we can't afford commercials, stuff like that, I think goes out the window, particularly now that you've got Marvel Studios, now that you've got, you know, DC being better integrated into the Warner family and stuff of entertainment. In both cases, it should be a contractual matter. You want to do a movie of this material, then you are required to do this, that, and the other in the DVD release. You know, push people towards the comics. If nothing else, it benefits the studio so they can, you know, figure out what the next best-selling thing is they want to adapt into a movie. Now, as far as the Cap and Thor movies go, I had kind of figured that Captain America was an easier sell in some respects than Thor, but everyone who's talking to me, having seen the trailers, work, friends, and stuff like that, they're more interested in Thor than they are in Captain America. I personally, having seen both trailers, I think Thor looks more interesting. I also find it very ironic that it's very much a Asgard's on Earth kind of a thing, because it sure looked like Asgard was sitting there out there in Oklahoma, right about the time that in the comics they've done a reversal on that and kicked them back out into Asgard space. But, you know, that's just, you know, timing for you. I think the publishers need to stop flipping titles as often as they're doing. They need to work on retaining sales within a title. Until they do that, we're going to continue to see the entire list kind of, you know, drop in sales. I mean, by the time we're out of the top 50, we're down at about 31,000, 32,000 units. Closer to the 31,000, actually. You know, we're below 50,000 by rank 27. So there are not that many comics that are selling that well. Matter of fact, with the exception of Fantastic Four, I'm willing to bet, well, not willing to bet, even with Fantastic Four, I think you could fit the entire, I don't want to say readership, because it's not the readership, you could fit one reader per copy of the unit sold to retailers inside of most major football stadiums, you know, and again, compare that to the 350,000 that was a cutoff point many, many, many years ago, with really nearly 20 years ago with Image. And we see how much the stuff has fallen. So I'm curious to see how things are going to do with Fear Itself, with Flashpoint, and, you know, if we're going to actually see some movement near the top of the list, and how that actually does for some of these otherwise unrelated titles. I mean, DC's about to lose two slots on this top of the list, not next month, but the month after, as Brightest Day goes away. Are they going to have something else to replace that, be it Flashpoint or something else? You know, how's Green Lantern going to do? How long is it going to be able to stay up where it's at? I think there's a lot of churn on this list that's going to happen.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about the Point One initiative in a little more detail?
Sure, if you have questions on that. I mean, we kind of talked about some of that already.
Right. I mean, well, one thing I, you know, just touch upon one more time, because another one of Brevoort's comments that I thought you'd be good to make a rebuttal to is, you know, Brevoort says, I've seen some of the internet chatter about this, and honestly, these people don't know what the question was. Let me start with this. The question was, people have noted that the Point One comics haven't registered numbers as strong as the regular monthly titles. And Brevoort says, these people don't know what they're talking about. First of all, as I always say, the numbers you see released online are not accurate. Never have been, never are. The Point One books have done terrifically. Many have performed at a level slightly higher than the monthly issues, and the weakest of them sold at around the level of the monthly book. That's a massive success. Now, I thought that the point of driving new readers to a book, because I would kind of assume that someone who's reading Spider-Man already would get Spider-Man 654.1, okay, by and large. And that the bar for success would be getting new readers to try this out that aren't buying Spider-Man. So that the success point for it should be having sales that are better. Well, plus the fact that these were $2.99 and the regular books for everyone that I think every I single one of these were all $3.99 books. So by having a book that's cheaper and that is supposed to be driving new readership, I would think that the bar for a massive success, Tom Brevoort's words, would be having better sales. In fact, you know, let's say 20% better sales or 10% or some kind of better sales that would drive more readers onto the monthly book. That would be the bar for declaring victory and calling them a massive success. That's just me.
I think you're on the right trail there, because I would think that if this were a massive success and you were to chart out the sales of the title, you would see it going along how it had been going. You would see, again, a bump up, a noticeable bump up visually, be it 10, 20%, whatever percent. And I think 20 is reasonable. 10, even that, is something visually you would notice. And at that point, staying at that level and continuing the sales trend. In other words, you would see a spike in the sales, but not a spike that then went down, but a jump up in sales that it stayed with. And anticipating this question this morning, I charted out the last 6 months or so of Amazing Spider-Man, Captain America, Deadpool, Hulk, Invincible Iron Man, Thor, Uncanny X-Men, and Wolverine, all of which have the 0.1 issues so far. And I lined them up to where all the 0.1s would kind of hit at the same point in the chart, just so I had a clear place where I could say, oh, that's where the 0.1 was. Because visually, looking at the chart without an indication of where the 0.1 issue is, you would not notice it. By and large, the sales trends were continuing. They are at or around how the title had been selling, which in and of itself, not bad, up until, like you pointed out, Bob, you realize these were a dollar cheaper and great jumping on points, so the fact they didn't really sell noticeably different than the regular title, to me, seems a little odd. And certainly I would not categorize these as a major success in terms of getting new readers, in terms of pleasing existing readers, in terms of any kind of influx of sales. On the other hand, it did allow them to get another issue out of all of these titles within the normal chain of events. So there is more money coming in that way.
So that's where I get to. You know, it's like, if the actual intent was to drive new readership, right, I don't see how the observed behavior here could be called a massive success by anybody.
And I agree with that.
If instead the intent that they're not coming out and saying to us, but if the intent was just to get your existing readership to buy another book and to have Marvel make another couple of hundred thousand dollars that month by having another book bought by its existing fans, then that's a massive success. And I think that's where they're actually coming from. Because, you know, to call this a massive success, by one criteria, it's not a massive success. By the other criteria, sure, it's a massive success. They made a bunch of extra money by selling these 0.1 issues to mostly existing readers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think as a new reader initiative it was successful. I think the fact it exists is detrimental to getting new readers, because it tells them, hey, you've got to wait for one of these before jumping on. Now, he also mentioned in that quote you had there about these numbers just being totally wrong. And that's something I've heard many times and, frankly, continue to tire of. Because if he's saying these don't match the total sales figures across all sales channels and stuff for Marvel, hey, he's entirely right. Nobody is saying that they do. You know, when I talk about these numbers, I'm clear at the beginning of every episode and at the caveat stuff at the end. These are sales to retailers, through Diamond, etc. So when he's saying they are not accurate or that they are wrong, I think he is misspeaking and trying to paint these numbers as something that neither I nor Milton Greep, who does the stuff over at ICV2, nor John Jackson Miller over at Comic-Con, are painting them to be.
I think that's where you come into it, though, is while you and Milton and John Jackson are very clear on what they are and what they are not, there's all these other news sites on the web that, like, grab onto these numbers the second that they're published and seem to talk about them like they are rote accurate, you know, something that they're not, because they don't know the analysis behind it like you guys who are actually generating the data know.
And, but again, I quibble with the term accurate.
Right.
Because I'm giving numbers as good as the data I'm getting out of Diamond and what I'm using to kind of unlock that list. Now, yes, maybe that's off, but right. I can only deal with the information I got.
And again, I'm saying for you guys, that's right, because you're very clear on what the numbers are and what the numbers are not. But I think a lot of the news sites pick them up and then start talking about them like they're something that they're not. Right, they pick up on these numbers and they start talking about them like they are the be-all and end-all of sales, which is in fact incorrect because they're not speaking about them as what they are. They're not putting the caveat. They're not putting the context on them. They're just saying, here's the numbers. Here's what the sales are, you know, kind of thing. And you know, it's kind of like that signal-to-noise ratio. I mean, you guys are the signal, and there's a couple of you, and then there's all these other people that are talking about, and it's like the telephone game where the message becomes obscured in the retelling by other people, and well, that's what a lot of people hear.
I think that's part of it, but I also think it comes down to the smoke screen that some of the publishers need to be kicking up around these numbers, because I can't imagine any publisher would be happy to be seeing their sales reported as, you know, below 10,000 nationwide or something. Marvel and DC, part of publicly owned companies, big conglomerates, that doesn't make them look good. Image and other publishers, it may not have the public, you know, accountability aspect to the same levels, or really any levels in some cases, but it doesn't make them look good either. So I get when they come out and say, oh, these numbers are just wrong. And they're able to throw the accusation out there without really backing it up. And, you know, I have been able to compare these numbers to, you know, the print runs and paid circulation figures shown in the Marvel Comics every year when they do the statement of ownership. It accounts for, you know, 80, in some cases 90% of the comic sales. Obviously on the trades, as we talked about at the year end, it could be a wild difference. Some cases it could be 100% of the known sales out of the top 700 for the book's mass market. Other cases they could have 95% of the sales versus the 5% through Diamond just because of the difference in material. But again, in terms of the comic side, as best I can tell, these account for 80 to 90% of the sales of many titles. Again, certainly not all. Given how many publishers have exclusive agreements through Diamond, that kind of limits their other sales channels to a large degree, certainly in the direct market. And it, you know, it frustrates me for them, for somebody like Brevoort to just be able to kind of throw stones like that and not really back it up. Because I frankly have had times where I've been able to get a sanity check on the numbers I've got, and I've been getting kind of a, they're pretty much in the ballpark. Maybe not spot on to the actual issue count or whatever, but not a, wow, these are just so ludicrous. And
But that's the thing, right? Because you're talking about using these things as, in fact, a indicator and showing the appropriate general trend. And, you know, over time, especially if you look at the series of numbers and you can look at the year over years and, you know, whatever, you can see the actual interesting information, which is a trending. But, you know, being off by 10% or 15% in a large scale of things, well, sure, if you want it to be completely accurate, it's not. But
again,
it's not like you're saying
it's not completely accurate. Yeah. It would be all-inclusive. And I think that's a key difference, because I think any potential inaccuracy between what I, Milton, and John Jackson Miller are reporting as the estimated sales for the direct market versus the actual sales through the direct market is going to be fairly minor. I would say within a, you know, 2-3% max. you know, for that, if even that much, and I think that's a big overstatement. So I stand that as best I can tell, not having, you know, all of the sales figures from all of the companies and stuff, because frankly they refuse to give them out, and understandably so, that this information is indeed accurate. Whether it is all-inclusive for sales outside of Diamond, I do not believe it is, and I am basically saying, who on earth would think it would be? Why would Diamond report sales outside of out of them? It's that's ludicrous. So if there is any offset between the numbers that I'm coming out with and the direct market sales, I would think that would be a systemic problem consistent across time, and therefore the trends should be the same regardless. So I think we're able to draw meaningful information out of this. And the meaningful information, again, I get out of this on the Point One program is it was as if it was just another issue of the title, which in and of itself argues a something of a failure of the program, you know.
Right.
But it's a matter of understanding what these numbers are and are not. And I try to do as best I can, both in my articles and CBR and all of this kind of stuff. I do think there's some major confusion as to what these numbers are and aren't. And just general misunderstandings on that. So right. I try to do what I can to correct that. But, you know, again, I go back to questioning some of Brevoort's intent and some of his statements on this, given he does act as a mouthpiece for the company at times, and at times has been proven to be woefully inaccurate on things. Again, stating up until pretty much the last minute that Civil War IV was going to be on time, when there is no way he could have not known how massively late it was going to be. And again, that had a huge, huge impact on retailers. So if he wants to paint this as a wild success for the Point One program, he's more than welcome to, but I don't think there's any substantial indication that from the information publicly available that that's accurate.
Right.
So. Going through the price points this time around, the most popular price point, actually by a fairly noticeable margin this time, was the $299 price point. I attribute that to DC holding the line at $299, or drawing the line, I should say. Let's get the tagline correct. 153 of the items, actually 51% on the nose of the list was that way. 104 were at $399. That's 34.67% of the list. So that right there is 87% of the list right there with just the two price points. The $3.50 price point had 19 items, and the $4.99 had 11 items. Once you add those in, it accounts for 95.67% of the list. So there are a couple items at a dollar. Actually, there were seven there. And that accounts for, you know, 98% of the list right there. So really, you know, five price points are the common ones. $2.99, $3.99, $3.50, $4.99, and then a dollar with a couple of, you know, one-offs here and there. Again, it was a decent month overall for the top 300. It was closing in on 6 million. That's better than we've seen in some recent months. But I think that is a little misleading at times, given how the downward trend is on most individual titles. So, anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think it does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If
If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during a month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.